CliffCentral.com.
I'm Adrian Groenewald, with me Alison Yandu and Richard Angus. Gentlemen, welcome.
How's it, Adrian?
Good to be here, Adrian.
Good to talk business. I mean, gosh, leadership in SME environment. Of course, what we discussed this first half hour, our business skills conversation in association with USB Ed, is valid for large business as well. But our slant, our emphasis is the SME owner, because if we don't create jobs through that avenue of SMEs, we're in trouble as a country, especially these days. And I have very strong views on that. It's good to have you here, and I think we all believe in that. That's why we run the show. Last week, we discussed self-knowledge, self-worth, self-confidence, and a lot of valuable stuff came out of there, because one might think, oh, it's a bit pie in the sky, but I think it was very, very effective. And today we have Mike Gee in the studio. Mike, welcome.
Well, thank you very much. It's lovely being here. Good afternoon, everyone.
Do I have your surname right?
Yes, you did. Okay. Most people don't get it, but you've got a certain one.
What do they say? G and everything else?
You don't want to go there.
My surname is Groenewald. It often goes wrong. All right. So welcome, Mike. And today's conversation, very important. Richard Angus, you know, you facilitate most of it from the finance team, founder and CEO of the finance team. And, you know, hopefully we have some SMEs coming into the studio that will also ask questions, share their thoughts and views. Right, let's kick off. Today, I didn't announce, it's a very important topic. What is it? What do we say? Developing a robust business model. Very important.
Yeah, it's a critical part in part of any conversation in business. And I think fundamentally, we talk about, you know, is this for the SME? Is this for the new business startup? The reality is, knowing and understanding your business model is critical to all businesses, no matter what size. You know, that goes from the smallest one-man business all the way through to the biggest super corporates. And the reality is, what we're going to chat about is this whole principle of how do you make sure that you've got what we call a robust business model, which is effectively how do you make sure that you start your business and keep going in your business. And what often happens is we have an idea, we think about something, and then before we know it, we're running into trouble and we start losing the plot, so to speak. Mm. And we realize very quickly that fundamentally the business that we thought we had actually isn't sustainable. And it comes down to the elements of effective and sustainability. So if your business model isn't effective and it doesn't sustain itself long term, if it's a short term scenario, you've got some challenges. And we're going to talk through that today. So, Mike, I mean, this whole question of, let's call it your business model per se. I mean, I know we've often talked, and it's talked about as, let's call it the canvas on which you paint, so to speak, and they actually do. There's a name given the business model canvas that we talk of. That's one of the models that's out there, but I think it's a very worthwhile model when we come to talking about a whole question of your business model and how it develops and grows. What's the starting point when you're looking at a business? I mean, let me give you the example. You know, I'm starting out. I'm thinking of something. I've decided I'm going to crochet doilies, and we're going to sell these at the Saturday market. That's my business model. Okay. No comments? Comments?
No. I'll pass on the doily comment, but you know, there are a vast number of people who've got bright ideas. A New Zealander I know quite well puts it this term. He says there are many, many people who are craftsmen. Mm. They know how to produce something of value to somebody. The most important thing at the start is that they think they're producing it for people like themselves. So you're going to produce doilies? You probably have yourself in mind. Problem is, somebody's got to pay you for this. Mm-hmm. Now, the key here is to say, who's going to buy my product? Who's going to pay me to be in business?
This old question of who is my customer?
Who's my customer? And in terms of the business model canvas, we talk about the target audience, mm-hmm. the target customers. Now, an example is quite simple. Nobody can see me, but basically I am non-standard in shape. Mm-hmm. So when I go to it...
horizontally challenged is the word I use.
Horizontally challenged, vertically don't fit my horizontal dimensions.
Okay.
And when I buy a pair of trousers, they never fit. Mm-hmm. So in theory, there is a target market made up of people like me for whom trousers are exactly... would fit me perfectly, which would be the ideal. I could walk in, take something off the shelf and walk out. The problem is there's probably only one person who's got precisely my measurements. So there's a gap in the market for me, but there's no market in that gap.
So
if we get on to your doilies, there may be people who want your doilies, but is it big enough to justify your business?
So can I now also put something to you that... Back in the day, we used, you know, there was always this question, and you know, Henry Ford started the, you know, you can have any Model T as long as it's any color Model T as long as it's black, mass production, and then the world moved on a little, and then we started coining this kind of phraseology, the market of one, building customized products just for you, and a few companies have gone down that road, some have got it right, some have got it wrong. So yeah, what's your thoughts on trying to be so good that you're building or making a pair of pants just for Mike Gee?
Well, that would be ideal. If somebody
does that
could,
work?
It would work. But there you would have to have multiple Mike Gees that you're going to address. Because you're not going to survive in making trousers for me.
Yeah.
So if we step back from the market of one, in the background you've got to have an operation that can communicate with however many markets of one that you're dealing with. So we see companies who are mass customizing or customizing mass production. Yeah, it's a market of one, but when they're finished with one, they've got to go to two, they've got to go to three, they've got to go to four. It's that continuity.
So if you're going to do that, if you're going to get into that world of trying to serve unique customer needs, I'm hearing you've got to have very high capability and capability of managing all of that those tiny little incremental changes that are needed for each element of customization.
Yeah, that requires...
And that's complexity. So... If you don't want complexity in your business model, so let's get back to the business model conversation. If you want simplicity in your business model, you have to find customer segments or customer markets that are pretty standard and you can serve those fairly easily in your business. So you've got to give that some thought in terms of as you build your business model. Are you customizing and solving the problem for the customer perfectly, or are you going with a little bit more of a broad brush, less customized solution, but it's easier to deliver.
Okay.
And I guess there's also a question. I mean, my experience would tell me that customers are very demanding, and if you promise something and can't deliver it, they make you you're going to die as an organization.
Especially in today's world.
Yeah. So be careful of not overpromising in terms of that customer segment, because if you overpromise and you don't deliver, that will be the end of your business model, no matter who you are.
Oh, absolutely. And I think we've got to deal with this issue of simplicity versus complexity. If I'm starting a business, I can't create a complex structure from get-go.
Okay.
Because that immediately implies systems, numbers of people, complex setups. If I'm starting, I need to have something that I can deal with in sufficient volume to eventually generate the business that I need, and then try my next market segment and then my next market segment.
So does that talk to the whole principle of making sure you understand your value proposition?
Oh, without a doubt.
Okay.
Without a doubt.
I have a question for Mike. Sorry to jump in here. So could it happen, therefore, that your plan becomes, you know, the thing that adds the complexity to your business?
Yes.
So would you subscribe to the notion that ditch the plan, get on with the business? Or you still need a plan?
Oh, I think you need a plan. Let's not confuse the difference between plan and planning and creating the plan. Mm-hmm. We can spend an enormous amount of time writing down a plan. And as we walk out of the door, the world has changed.
Totally.
But you need to, at some stage, sit back and think about what it is that you're trying to achieve. Who is it that you're trying to serve? Know that as you start dealing with the customer that you're dealing with, suddenly there's going to be some wrinkle that you haven't thought about, and the plan becomes dead at that instant.
So could,
but the objectives are still right.
So could the plan emerge sort of in a backward version? You start the business, you've seen the gap, intuition, very important
okay.
in business.
Yes, buy that.
So could it happen that therefore you are able to still work your plan in reverse? As you execute, you create systems to help you, you know, formalize your business as you go, then to be bogged down with the plan and never really getting going.
Okay, let's be very careful. The process of creating a documented plan can absorb a lot of resources, a lot of intellect, and a lot of time. Mm-hmm. And if you are going to be running your business in an entrepreneurial environment where you're going to have to be moving quite fast, can you stop and say, whoa, world, stop. I just want to get off for X many hours while I write a plan. I would far rather study that you had a clear understanding of who your target customer is, what value you're trying to deliver to them, mm-hmm. the best understanding you've got of delivering that value, and that you also have the flexibility to say, well, path A is not working, so we'll try path A or part one.
Okay.
Now, if you're big enough and you've got to communicate with a lot of people, mm-hmm. then you need a plan. But when you're starting out, there's you and the dog and some other people.
Or you need money.
Or you need...
Is it often the case that the plan is much more critical for funding purposes?
Undoubtedly. Undoubtedly. Yeah. Nobody's going to lend you money unless they can see the numbers.
Yeah. I think we do need to differentiate, though, between the principle of your business model
yes.
and your business plan. Okay. And fundamentally, the difference between the two is... If you don't have a robust business model, the reality is you have no plan, okay, period. But the model is all about what generates the revenue, what the cost streams look like, and ultimately how you're actually going to create a business that's enduring. So, you know, it goes effectively, you can't have a plan without the model. You don't have the model unless you've got your customer and understanding who your customer is, an understanding of your value proposition, an understanding of the resources that you're going to use to make this happen. So, you know, your business model is a stepping stone in getting the plan developed, per mm-hmm. se. But the reality is that if you haven't spent time understanding your value proposition, mm-hmm. it's not a bankable conversation even. So okay. you can't even start talking about a business plan if you haven't got your model right.
I like that. Juxtaposition model plan. Can we take a more specific example, for example, and you know, even hypothetically speak about how would say take KFC? What would be their model versus what potential is their plan?
Okay, let's talk about KFC or any fast
Nando's or whatever.
Nando's or whatever.
Okay, well, we'll do this and then we'll go to an audience member, SME, okay. that's got a
Absolutely.
Question.
Absolutely. I think if you understand...
It's all chicken at the end of the day.
No. it's all chicken. But let's just think of the difference between KFC and Nando's. It's all chicken. Mm-hmm. But what is Nando's position? Their target audience... is not the same as the target audience for KFC. The whole clear position of Nando's is that they are a little bit irreverent, both mm-hmm. in their taste and in their promotion. Mm-hmm. If you walk into an outlet, they're looking for a community of people, they're targeting a community of people who are not necessarily mainstream. I'm not saying that they're weird and wonderful, they're not necessarily mainstream. Mm-hmm. Whereas KFC... is standard quality, consistent quality in both, but they're a bit more mainstream in their community of people. So their model is targeting slightly different community mm-hmm. of chicken eaters. KFC is one. Nando's, they make a great big fuss about being flame grilled where everybody else is something else.
Okay.
They're mm-hmm. saying live the Portuguese flavor versus Colonel Sanders. Mm. Two different deliveries, two different messages. Mm. Mm. Both of them have exactly the same delivery process, and that is many outlets in many places positioned mm-hmm. accessibly. Mm. But their model is the difference. Their model encompasses Who's my target audience? How do I reach them? And what am I telling them that makes me a part?
I mean, I guess if you look at a model, I mean, fundamentally, the resources that they apply are fundamentally the same.
Absolutely.
The key partners that help them drive, virtually same. Identical. The activities that they do, fundamentally, they're preparing food, but it's how they prepare the food. So one's, let me say it, fried versus flame grilled.
Yes.
And the way they manage their value proposition and thus their customer relationship is very different. I mean, Nando's sends the message that, you know, we're giving you that, as you say, the Portuguese experience, but also that it's a naughty Portuguese experience.
It's slightly irreverent. Yes. Yeah. Have a look at the advertising.
Yeah. And so fundamentally, you know, their revenue streams are exactly the same. Mm-hmm. Okay. Their cost streams and cost structure slightly different, but not a massive fundamental. Yet they play to two totally different market segments.
And they can coexist.
And they coexist, they often coexist right next to each other in shopping centers and environments.
It's that different target audience and different value that sets them apart, so that they can sit next to each other, and you or I could stand in front of the two standing next to each other, and one will choose one and one will choose the other, and that's because we are different audiences.
I mean, this is making me think. Let's go to the audience member.
It's making you hungry as well.
But consider the new world. So we're talking restaurants as examples. Yes, fine. Mm-hmm. But the world we're moving into, what kind of characteristics must a business model have to succeed, because technology plays a big role. You have a one-man band that can do... We had a guy in here, successful business. What was his name? He's also associated with USB Ed. His name will come to me in a moment. He's kind of a one-man band, but he runs a business.
The gentleman from Imaginate.
Adam Rabinowitz. Yeah.
A new sort of world, the economic model that we find ourselves in. Okay, let's go to the audience. So we've got an SME owner who's going to pitch her business and then comment or ask a question of the panel.
Hi, my name is Amanda. I'm from an organization called Empowervate Trust. We're an NGO that operates nationally in schools. We run an active citizenship and empowerment program for primary and secondary schools in collaboration with the Department of Education. And what we have is a website and Facebook and Twitter, as well as YouTube. Empowervate is our organization's name. I did pitch last week as well, so I'm sure you'll remember me.
I was going to say, Amanda,
I hope you remember me.
I was going to say, I remember you, and the pitch has improved considerably.
Oh, wow. I didn't even practice. So my comment was about the planning element and how you need to see what resources you already have and then what you need, what time you already, what you're going to need time-wise and money and all of that. In our program, we actually offer all of that information to the learners because they have to run a project. So we explain to them that even if you have an idea of what you want to do but you have no plan, then you're not going to get anywhere because you're not going to know where to start. Then you need to find out what you already have before you go and look for stuff. First see what you have, and then you'll see what you need. And then also budget your time, because, you know, time you can't get back. Once it's gone, it's gone. Money you can get back. You know, you can go to win the lottery and get your money back. You can go gambling and get it back. But time you can't. Once it's gone, it's gone. So another thing that we've actually got in our toolkit is explaining how a plan did not work out and what they did as a plan B. Because people need to learn that just because something didn't happen the way you wanted it to, you shouldn't give up. Because a lot of people are like, okay, this is how it's going to happen. And then when it doesn't happen like that, they lose all interest, motivation, and then they just don't want to do it anymore. So I think kids learning that from a young age is a great life skill, because they're going to use that in their future lives for everything they do, not only in business, but just in their lives generally. So that was my comments on what you were saying about planning.
Okay, I just want to make a comment here, or quick test. Mike, how many times have you seen business models that have actually worked out as originally envisaged? Have you ever seen one that's been perfect?
No.
Okay, so to your point. No. So,
and the flexibility and the willingness to engage with why it didn't work and to find a way around that or through it or whatever is the key. And it's that... I've read somebody called it stick-attedness.
Stickiness.
Yeah. Stickativity.
Stickativity. All right. Let's quote a word. Let's create a word. The stickativity says, I believe in what I'm trying to achieve. Mm. I absolutely believe I know who my target audience is. It's getting from the idea to the reality.
Mm.
That is the hard part. Now, the process of planning, to get to your comment, the process of planning will give you a sense of what resources you need, what resources you've got, where that gap is going to be filled, what additional resources you're going to need, and how you're going to get them. But when one of them doesn't work out, you've still got to have that mindset that says, I still believe in what I'm trying to achieve. And there is a way around it. So this goes back to my comment earlier on. Let's not get hung up about the plan, the written document. Let's get really hung up about the process of planning and getting ourselves around that.
Thank you for your good question and comments there. But more so in today's world? More so in today's fast-moving, changing, ever-changing world?
I think it's still true. Mm. Even in today's fast-moving world, you may have to think faster. You may have to think differently, and you may have to understand that there's an infinite way of getting to people. Because if we just go back a few years, the power of the social media was something you didn't think about. But now, how many new social media tools are popping out of the woodwork almost on a monthly basis?
Hmm.
So if one is not getting to your key audience, there might be another one.
So... I think one of the critical elements of the business model is the question of the channels to your customer segment. So the reality is, in today's day and age, we're actually adding channels virtually, interactively in the world today. The reality is that the channels are growing. I saw a picture or a series of pictures the other day. And they were entitled Then and Now.
Mm.
And in the first picture, you see this cat playing with a ball of wool. And then in the now, there's the cat playing with its paw on the iPhone, moving the icons up and down. The then you see kids playing in the park. Now you see them sitting on the bench looking at the at the tablet. And I think the world has moved on so quickly. In terms of channels that are available, it's an exponential growth. And if you're not, and I think there's a message, if you're not using technology to access your customer channels, or through your channel into your customer segment, the reality is that you are going to be left behind.
Absolutely.
If you don't do it, somebody else will, and they will take your value proposition and take it to market.
Yes.
And in fact, we talk of that as disruptors in the market. I mean, let's take, for example, the insurance market, short-term insurance market, entities like Hippo, for example. They looked at the business model and the world of short-term insurance, and they realized that what people needed was comparability and ease of comparability. And what did they do? They just created an online presence that you put in all your put in the information, and it spits back 10 quotes for you.
Let's build on that one. Richard, if you think the original disruptor in the short-term industry were those who said, do we have to go through brokers?
Mm.
We don't have to go that far back in time when we went to a broker.
The middle person. Mm.
And then somebody came up, and OUTsurance is obviously the best known one at the moment, but there's a bundle of them, who said, why go to somebody else when we can provide that advice? Now, the business models, there are still some short-term insurers who say, we deal with brokers.
Mm.
There are others who say, we eliminate the brokers.
Mm.
And the two different audiences, the one audience is probably comfortable not dealing with somebody who's going to say, now, have you thought about this clause or that clause or the other clause? They've got a comfort there. But there's a whole bunch of people who are sufficiently uncertain about the technical aspects that they want to have an intermediary involved in them. That's two different business models, and it's two different target audiences.
Yeah.
Another industry that's in terrible trouble at the moment is travel agents.
Yep.
Yep. Now, who here has booked a ticket recently, going onto the web, made the booking, paid for it, and left? That's it. You're now a traveler.
Yeah,
but there's a whole bunch of people I know who would say, no, time out.
Oh.
I'm terrified of internet, to hell with computers and all these other scary things. Huh. I want to have a service person. Now, there's two models. Huh. Now, to get back to a word we haven't dealt with, this is the issue of a robust business model. Yeah. At the moment, thinking on travel agents, I don't think the intermediary model is a robust model, because steadily but surely we're moving to an environment where people are, oh, this disintermediation story, dealing without intermediaries, which is killing the intermediary business. And there's a steadily increasing number of people who are very, very comfortable still having somebody holding their hands.
Just describe, what is a robust business model then? It equals what?
And give a specific example.
Yeah, just a feel.
Can I give you an example of a real business that was not robust, and try and eliminate it on that basis? And the company concerned is, well, it was run by a guy by the name of Richard. He retired to the coast. He decided he was going to move to one of the coastal retirement areas, and his business was going to be edging people's gardens and lawns with a little concrete strip. So he bought a machine that was going to do this, and for a while he was making a bit of money. He was surviving very nicely, walking into a new arrival and saying, once you've laid out your garden, I'll bring my machine and we will lay this concrete strip that will keep the grass out, keep the weeds in. Lovely idea. But it wasn't a robust model, because eventually everybody had the concrete strip and there was no more market.
Mm-hmm.
The business died.
Yeah.
There was no long-term survivability. So robustness in today's world is also a little bit more difficult.
Mm-hmm.
Because the world is changing so fast. So for me, and just getting back to your point earlier on, robustness now becomes a case of, will it survive change?
Sustainability.
Sustainability. Yeah. So robustness is, it has that strength, that health.
In fact, so, I think I'll take that a step further and talk about adaptability and agility.
Absolutely. Because that's part of it.
Agility is partly to do with how you respond to the marketplace. Mm.
And therefore your plan must be agile,
yes,
and adaptable. It's not a fixed plan for even a year. Somewhere there must be a revolving conversation happening that finds its way into your plan.
Yes.
But I think it cannot be fixed if we understand the importance of the data.
Yeah.
This massive amount of data and the tools that Richard was talking about. Because I think the process of planning is also partly a process of how you access information,
mm-hmm.
how you utilize information, and how you get feedback. So have your channels right that are able to give you the right feedback from the customer. Mm-hmm. So at least you can pinpoint where the curves happen and where the cycles change.
Well, one of the most agile businesses around at the moment is Amazon.
Mm-hmm.
And when Amazon started out, they were a disrupting business that was attacking the book industry.
Mm. Killing it.
Killing it.
Yeah, they're killing it.
Now,
they killed it, actually.
Well,
No,
it almost.
Not
almost.
Yet.
Almost. But now suddenly we find something else is happening. They've now established bricks and mortar
bookshops.
Now, the question is, why has that happened?
Amazon.
Yeah.
The corner shops. In fact, it's a growing trend by Amazon.
Absolutely. Oh, now, shock. The point is that they've identified that as much as some of us are very comfortable buying books over the web, there are other people who want to pick them up and flip through them and have that lovely smell of new paper.
The nostalgia. Back to basics.
Mm-hmm. And they're saying, it's an opportunity. Because there were people they were missing out on. Now, there's actually another debate around Amazon, and their analysis of data shows that once they have somebody who is buying books, they start buying software, they start buying household goods, they start buying clothing, they start buying all sorts of things. So we start looking at what is Amazon today. It is definitely not what was started 10 years ago.
Okay.
It's become a channel for any product.
Absolutely.
It's just a channel.
And increasingly, a technology services company.
Online Amway.
Absolutely.
Online Amway.
So there's your example of agility. Their model was working, but they then changed it.
Okay, so let's summarize before we move on to our SME interview. So therefore, a robust business model needs an owner who is not fixated on what you're doing right now, who's not focused on just what I'm doing right now, but yet the world requires of me, because of all the competition, to be focused on my business as it runs now. But I have to have my finger on the pulse out there. I have to be very aware of the trends. I have to read widely. And things move so fast now and change so fast that if I don't stay... And I have an article I just wrote, sorry, very quickly, called The Concurrent Waves.
Yeah,
as a leader, I must be aware of what I'm doing right now, but I must be aware of the concurrent waves happening all the time, and even start those waves if I can.
Yes.
But that concurrent wave could be taking over what I'm doing right now, and I have better jump into that or leverage it. Richard, summarize for us.
Yeah, so I think, you know, you always start at the point of, so who's your customer? What is the customer segment that you're servicing? How are you going to get to the customer? Through a channel, per se. And what relationship have you got with the customer? Those are hand in hand. You then got to know what value you're actually delivering to that customer. Because if that value isn't there and it isn't robust, well, hey, this is going to be a problem long term. And then you got to say, well, if I want to deliver that value proposition, what are the key activities that sit behind that? And what I need to effectively make those key activities happen. Let's call them resources. And then fundamentally, there'll be a back end of partners and people that you work with, your employees, whatever it may be, to support all of those initiatives. Those result in ultimately your revenue and cost streams. And that in its entirety forms your model per se. Yes. Let's call it the canvas, everything wrapped together.
Yes. Okay. Great summary. Thank you so much. And we'll continue our conversation now with Mondi Zuma from Mamelodi Biz. In fact, he's got another business. We'll talk about both. But we like the initiative that he created here in Mamelodi, one of the townships around Pretoria. So our capital of South Africa. Let's not assume it's just South Africans listening. So there's what we call a township just outside of the east of Pretoria called Mamelodi. And he started Mamelodi Biz. And really excited to chat to him. But of course, the last half hour, we've spoken about a robust business model with Mike Gee from Business Knowledge Systems.
Yep,
your own boss. And for many years, you've been consulting, but also associated with USB Ed. Thank you, gentlemen. Let's continue the conversation in a moment. CliffCentral.com.